And I'd like now to welcome back to the show Lucian Niemeyer. He is a photographer and he has many books out, and a new show of his is opening this Saturday, October 6th at La Tienda at El Dorado. It's called Africa, the Holocausts of Rwanda and Sudan. There's a reception from 5 to 7 on Saturday. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte.
Now, we've talked about both of the books, the Africa books that you've done. One is the same name as the exhibition, Africa, the Holocaust of Rwanda and Sudan, and the other is Darfur. And you've spent quite a bit of time photographing in those places. How have things changed since you were last there, and above all, since you published these books?
Well, since that time, there's been a new country, South Sudan. It's the newest country in the world. And it was formed from the old Southern Sudan borders that were done before the British. The British came and they made it one. And at that time, they moved their administration from Juba to Khartoum. So the new lines are basically the same as was before the British molded the two countries together.
And so what is it actually like there in this new country, South Sudan?
Well, it's a new democracy, and it consists of three tribes, the Dinka, the Nuer, and the Shilluk. And there's no infrastructure. There is the capital is Juba. They're putting a few roads in now. It's potpourri. There's buildings going up, but there is no real justice system, there's no banking system, there is no infrastructure as we would know in any country. Their main money or their main support comes from the oil that comes from the south and then runs to the north. And there's been a big conflict on that between the north and the south, and there was almost war again. But it's been resolved this last week, in which they've come to the agreement that South Sudan pumps the oil and it goes through the northern Sudan pipelines to the port of the Red Sea.
So when you have a so-called democracy without the infrastructure of a modern democracy, the way we think of it and expect it and things like that, what is it? What's really going on there?
Well, it's very difficult. You still have the tribal conflicts between the Nuer and the Dinka, the two largest tribes. And every once in a while there will be a breakout. There's consistent struggles among the different tribes there, so it's very difficult to put together a country. There were no roads when I was there, no paved roads. Now there's some paved roads in Juba, but for all intents and purposes, there's still tracks across a large country.
Now, are these different tribes who are living there, are they self-sufficient? Do they produce their own water and food and clothing and so on?
Yes, usually. But as you remember in our discussions, the war, one of the strategies in the war was to move the tribe people away from their corn and their food and the water, and that created death. The problem is in southern Sudan, it's very arid, like New Mexico. And the time to sow food is in a very short time frame of maybe 2 or 3 weeks. If they don't sow it in the ground, they won't have food later. So there's been a lot of disruption of this, and it's going to take some years to even get it back to normal. The displacement was enormous, of people, and so it is a country at its very, very, very basic.
Now, are people going back, people who were displaced?
Yes, they're coming back, and that creates a problem on the food sources. As I said, if they miss that season to grow, it is incredible. When you go into a village, you will see a well. That is the infrastructure of the South. Then they might have a small medical aid center, and if they're lucky, they have a school. But beyond that, there is nothing.
Now, what about, I mean, I keep thinking these people have been surviving for longer than there has been democracy, at least on a large scale, there for longer than there has been roads and banks and infrastructure. Those are relatively modern things, but you have here in the Southwest and in Africa and everywhere in the world, people who have actual traditional ways of life that are reasonably sustainable, that go back forever. Are those ways, I mean, can they be revitalized, or is that going to be a thing of the past?
Well, interestingly enough, they tell me that in the Nile area, in the overflow areas of the Nile, there is enough arable land to feed the whole world. It is incredibly rich that way. It is an old country, as you know. The beginnings of the man can be found in that area. So when you're talking about this, and I talk about this in the Darfur book, you're going back into 2,000, 3,000 years before Christ, as they built the pyramids and the people fled into the Sudan from the raids for slavery. And so it's a very old country. And then, of course, the conflict between the Arabs then conquered the northern part of all of Africa, Northern Horn. And so the conflicts then between the Arabs and the black that existed there for so many thousands of years is pretty sharp. It was erased when there's peace, but as soon as there is war and conflict, it is a great divide, and that's, of course, where we had the big genocides.
We're talking to photographer Lucian Niemeyer. So what is your role there now? When were you last there as a photographer, as a visitor?
I was there in 2002. I've had some contact in the last few days with the very high people in the Khartoum government. I don't know what they want from me, but I know that this book has had the Africa book has had an enormous impact in the government. Foundation gave a copy to every senator and also to people in the United Nations, and for some reason it's had a life of its own that has continued to ask me to be participating in.
That's fascinating. What has been the effect of your book? How have people responded to it?
Very, very favorably. The most of the response has come from people from the Sudan that have been displaced or have come to this country. They have said, we are so happy to see the true account of what has happened there. And I got to tell you a little story on that. I was, before I was going to Darfur, I had to go to Uganda to get a visa to go into Sudan. And I was in a hotel there, and for some reason, the people in Sudan had heard that I was going to be there. They knew of the book. Eight of them traveled for 2 weeks, walking and by bus, to come to visit me. I was so embarrassed by it all. And they asked me for some books, and they got it, but they came to visit. The book has had power in a place where there is very, very little communication except word by word of mouth.
It's fascinating because, of course, photography has the ability to both tell it like it is and open people's hearts.
Well, that was the objective of my work, that if you look at my work, you'll see very close-up people who have overcome the problem, people who are suffering under the problem. It is a powerful, powerful story of the edge of humankind that the world does not hear enough about. We hear of problems, of course, in Mexico. We hear of problems in other parts of the world. But this is the frontier of humankind.
Now, are foreign aid organizations and charities who are concerned with the well-being of people in far-flung places, are they getting involved there?
Very much so, and I am so happy about that. If you notice in both of my books, I have dedicated to the non-governmental organizations who go in there at the threat of their lives, and they go in there to help. It is an amazing, amazing story what has happened from America, most of it, going into these countries and helping. It's striking. America is the largest supplier of food to Sudan, and has been very, very much involved with very little publicity to it.
There is a photograph of a young boy that you're caption of in the book says is a slave. What is the situation of slavery in modern-day Sudan?
It continues. When I did the book, the only people that were redeemed were the people that the owners wanted to get rid of, which were maybe the top bottom 25% of what is there. The slavery between the Muslim and the over the Dinka in the south continues, still on. And the CSI, which is involved in buying them back, is still working very hard to buy back as many of the slaves as they can. I don't know what the current price, but of course the price when I was there was $35 a slave to redeem them, and that was the price of a goat.
Good heavens. So you could go there with a pocket full of cash and save 10 or 20 people?
Precisely.
Did you do that?
Yes, we did. We did 4,100 people. And it's an amazing story, because what happens is you see the first all of the accounting going on, and then you see the documentation of the people that are redeemed, so they aren't redeemed again and again and again, and then all of a sudden they're let go, and they go to their villages, and some don't know where to go and what to go. It is a frontier of the human condition.
Have you been able to follow up with any of the people whose lives were liberated in that way?
No, I have not been able. You have to know that it's so difficult to communicate, so difficult to go anywhere to do anything. You go in by plane, you go into dirt landing strips that are very, very rough, and sometimes there are accidents happen there. There is no way to get in there. There's no ability to get in there. So the difficulties of following something like that, I've tried to, but it's impossible. I can't even get to the leaders.
We're talking to Lucian Niemeyer about his exhibit, Africa, the Holocaust of Rwanda and Sudan. Now, this exhibition, these photographs, which are very powerful, not only has the book had a real effect, as you just mentioned, but the exhibit has been shown in a bunch of places.
Yes, it was very lucky. It was shown the first time. One of the Rwanda story was told in Delaware Art Museum, which is a prestigious art museum, and I was very lucky to then, and then it went to Lehigh, and it's gone to many places, including St. John's. About 3 years ago, it had a whole year at the Maxwell Museum at the University of New Mexico, which is a very prestigious museum.
And this is a couple hundred photographs?
This is 160-some photographs and another 40 panels.
Wow.
And they did it they took each story in each quarter. They did the Rwanda story, then the slave story, and then the Nuba Mountain story, and the Holy Jihad story in each quarter. And Paul Rissanjani, the man from Rwanda, and I gave a lecture there. There was a lot of people that came in that were very familiar with that situation, including Sudanese.
Tell our listeners why you think it's important for Americans to know about this and to get involved.
Because it is a frontier of humankind. To understand what this world is about and the difficulties in it, if you see this exhibit and you see the people that are portrayed in it and what they face, it is extremely powerful. And it's far greater. You know, people said, well, weren't you afraid? No, you're not afraid. You're involved in such a big story that you're so small and you're not important. It's a huge story, and it's a story that if people see, they will forget the problems they have, because it's nothing compared to what you're seeing.
No doubt. I mean, there's one photograph of a woman who has flies on her face, beautiful, looking down, looking sad, and the flies connote disease.
Yes, it does. And she's going to die. It is a disease that produces sweetness to the skin. And life is very, very cheap there. You're talking maybe, you know, if you're 39 years old, you're old. There's a little story on that. I went into a village when we were redeeming slaves, and I asked who was the oldest man in the village, and they pointed him out, and he was a gray-haired man. And I walked up to him, and I had an interpreter, and I said, I understand you're the oldest man in the village. And he said, yes. I said, what year were you born? He said, 1942. And I said, I was born in 1937. He put his hand out, brother. But it is remarkable, because he was an old man, and And life is very, very cheap there.
So the exhibit is called Africa, the Holocaust of Rwanda and Sudan, and it's at La Tienda at El Dorado, opening this Saturday, the 6th of October, from 5 to 7, and running for about 4 weeks through November 3rd. Now, how much of the whole exhibit are you going to have there?
The whole exhibit.
The whole thing's going to be there, so that's a big space.
It's big space, and it's up now.
Excellent. So people can wander over.
Yeah, they can sneak in.
They can wander over and sneak in. But the reception is on Saturday, and your books will also be available there.
Yes.
So any planned trips anytime soon?
I don't know. Somebody's always probing in and poking in, and I don't know. And yes, it'll probably be a trip, but you don't know. You're at the mercy. If they have a need, I'll go. If there's just a trip, I don't want to go. There has to be something of value for me to tell.
Photographer Lucian Niemeyer, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte.